Yeah, good afternoon. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 1:33 p.m. on the afternoon of February 19th, 2024. I'm joined by Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, and myself, Senator Wilson. We have Senator Geisel here in the audience, as well as Senator Kaufman and his staff. So we have two bills on the agenda, Senate Bill 34 by Senator Kaufman. The other one is Senate Bill 82 by Senator Bjorkman. The Senate Bill 34, Senator Kaufman, if you want to come on up with your aide, introduce yourself for the record and tell us about Senate Bill 34, the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson, the other co-chairs and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, I am Senator James Kaufman, Senate District F.
You want to identify yourself as well for your staffer?
Pardon me, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman.
Okay. Tell us about the bill, Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, I want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss reestablishing the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska once again. To very briefly recap, the commission is made up of 10 public members, one senator, and one representative. The commission's role is to represent the views of Alaska citizens concerning federal land management plans within the state. The commission holds hearings, collects public comment on decisions that affect them, disseminates information about old and new regulations to the public, the executive branch, and the legislature, monitors the Federal Register, and regularly submits written comment in response to actions that affect Alaska, works proactively with federal agencies to resolve issues, helps Alaskans navigate federal permitting processes. And so those two last bullets, they're very critical as that navigator and also helping to mitigate issues as they're building rather than letting them come to a head. The changes in the committee substitute were developed over the summer to address concerns we heard that we shared about the commission's diversity and independence. As Mr. Alper will describe, we believe that capping the number of members from any one judicial district will ensure that the commission is more geographically balanced. Individuals in our rural communities interface with federal regulations often on a daily basis, so it's critical that their voice is incorporated. And similarly, designating a seat for a member of a federally recognized tribe and a seat for a shareholder of ANCSA Corporation member will help the commission build on the work that Alaska tribes and ANCSA corporations are already doing on this subject matter. Finally, the language clarifying that CACFA is housed in DNR for administrative purposes came from concerns raised about CACFA being used to supplement ongoing work the state is doing on similar issues. This language, we believe, better clarifies that CACFA and its executive director operate independently of DNR, and what issues are taken up are driven by the commission members. So, again, thank you for hearing this bill. Appreciate it. And open to any questions or further presentation if we want to go there.
I think I got ahead of myself here. We first heard this bill on April 17th, took public testimony. We requested amendments. None were there, so we got a committee substitute to go ahead and move on. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 34, Work Order 33-Lima Sierra 0250/Shaktulik is our working document.
We have a motion on the table. I'll object for discussion. Mr. Alper, please come up and give us the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. Senator Kaufman did a good job of outlining what the changes in the committee substitute are. As they were developed, there are really two themes. One, increasing the independence of the group, and second, the inclusivity of the group. So the first change of the bill establishes that the commission, as reconstituted, is within DNR, Department of Natural Resources, but only for administrative purposes. And the second change related to that is that the commission itself shall determine which matters are considered and heard by them. They set their own agenda. It's not being set by the agency. The second series of changes has to do with the makeup of the group. There must be at least one member for each of the four Alaska judicial districts and no more than three members being from each of those districts. There are 10 public members of the group, so you could sort of imagine how the math would even out. And of those 10 public members, and the other two members are a member of the House and a member of the Senate. Of the 10 public members, one of them must be a tribal member and one must be a shareholder in an ANCSA corporation. Those cannot be the same person. And the fifth and final change is a simple update to the effective date of the bill from July 1st, 2023 to July 1st, 2024. That is all of the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any further comments, Senator Kaufman? Or?
No, sir. No. Through the chair, but happy to answer any questions between myself or my staffer, Emma Torkelson.
I will go ahead and remove the objection so we have version S in front of us. We have any discussion by the members of the committee on this bill? We have a motion, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 34, Work Order 33-LS-0250/ Shaq Tulik from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, without objection, Senate Bill 34 moves from this committee. Taking that ease to sign the paper, sign the report. We'll call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. Our second bill up is Senate Bill 82, the East Side of Cook Inlet Net Fleet Reduction by Senator Jesse Bjorkman. This is the first hearing. Senator Bjorkman, why don't you go ahead and give us the crux of your bill?
Thank you very much, Chairman Olson. Thank you, members of the esteemed Senate Finance Committee. I am gracious and thankful to be here with all of you today to hear this very important piece of legislation to provide economic relief and economic opportunity and incentive to my district on the shores of Cook Inlet, as well as to many, many people in South Central Alaska.
Senator Bjorkman, would you just identify
yourself? My name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman from Nikiski, and once again, thankful to be here today. For over a century, set net fishermen have fished the shores of Cook Inlet with a gear type that was essentially invented by people thousands of years ago, first documented on the shores of Kachemak Bay. And it's fascinating that as technology has changed so much, very little has changed with set net fishing and the ability to harvest our wild resources to feed Alaskans and to feed the world. Because of declining stocks of king salmon, both in Cook Inlet and around the state, allocation decisions and biological management decisions have been made to preserve king salmon. Also, the tastes and preferences of the Alaskan people have changed in their ability to fish on the banks of the Kenai River and Kosilof River has greatly increased with the attention to our tourism industry, which is also strong and thriving, as well as a desire for more people to engage in the fishery. And this has resulted in an allocation of fish away from our set net commercial fishery toward in-river user groups. Because of these allocation decisions and because of the priority placed on these salmon stocks for the sport fish and personal use public, the set net fishery has been, by and large, regulated out of business by the state of Alaska for the last 7 years. The set net fishery has been very, very limited in the fishing time that has been granted to it by the management plans that have been placed by the Board of Fish and by decisions that have been made to preserve populations of king salmon. And those allocations of fish have been taken away from our commercial fishers and given to in-river users. Senate Bill 82 goes to support all user groups, Mr. Chairman. This buyback program seeks to create a vehicle by which the set net fishery can go out and gather dollars from economically distressed fisheries grants through NOAA, as well as any other non-governmental organization that seeks to fund this program for the purposes of buying back Eastside set net permits. This permit buyback is not to be funded by state general fund dollars. It will not require the state to fund the dollars used to purchase these permits. These permits will be purchased by federal grants that are designed for economically distressed fisheries. These folks have had multiple disasters in their fishery, which you'll hear about later, Mr. Chairman, and they have been facing significant financial shortfalls because of these management decisions that have been made by the Board of Fish and implemented by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Senate Bill 82, the buyback program, supports all user groups because it will allow for more fishing opportunity for the set net fishery that does remain, as well as allowing when the set net fishery does fish for more fish to pass into the river. As we look at this program, it's important to note that this is a voluntary program. No commercial fisherman is required to participate in this program. No commercial fisherman is going to be forced to sell their permit. And for that reason, that there's an important option for all commercial fishermen to take under advisement when they choose whether or not to participate in this buyback program. As I look at some written comments that have been submitted, Mr. Chairman, speaking about the limited entry nature of this fishery and how things were decided in the 70s, I'm reminded that during the 80s and early 90s that many permits migrated into this fishery, and many permits came to the east side and increased fishing pressure even more as a direct result of some policy decisions that were put forward by other fishery groups in the inlet, placing more fisheries in this resource, more fishing nets in this limited resource area. And so as we consider the actions of those groups, many of the same people involved in those decisions and in those groups are some people against this bill now, I take pause at wondering about their recollection of history in the area and how things happen and why they happen. And I wonder at their motives in advocacy for stopping this fishery from going forward in any way by opposing this bill. Mr. Chairman, this bill would seek to reduce the set net permits by 200. You have in your packet a study done by Glenn Haight, which you'll hear from a little later, that those permits could be reduced even further to maximize the efficiency of this fishery and to make sure that the fishery is being promoted and prosecuted in a responsible way. And I think those are ideas that we should take a look at and consider. Once again, this is a voluntary program for these fishermen. The money coming to fund the buyback of these permits is not coming from the state. It's not being requested. The money will not come from the state general fund. It will come from economically distressed fisheries grants and non-governmental organizations. So thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. I have invited testifiers. I have my staff, the award-winning Conrad Jackson, here to present a sectional if you wish, and stand ready for your questions.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor? If not, Mr. Jackson, go ahead with your sectional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman. Good afternoon. The sectional of the bill before you, Senate Bill 82, is as follows. On page 1, Section 1 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska by adding the new section, a new section that establishes that this legislation may be known as East Side of Cook Inlet Set Net Fleet Reduction Act. Section 2 on the same page 1 amends the uncodified law of the state by adding new legislative findings and intent relating to the bill, specifically addressing two points. First, that it is in the public interest to reduce the number of permits in the east side of Cook Inlet set net fishery, and secondly, that this legislation will not have an adverse effect on the state treasury. On page 2, section 3, we are amending AS 1643-200 by adding two new subsections. First, the first C establishes an area in the upper subdistrict of the Cook Inlet Central District as a distinct administrative area separate from the Cook Inlet Central District. On the last day, this would happen on the last day of the year that the bill becomes, once the legislation becomes effective. This further establishes that the area is to be made up of statistical areas identified at the beginning of that year as Area 244-21, 244-22, 31 and 32, 41 and 42. Six statistical areas that you will see on a number of maps in your packet, Mr. Chairman. Secondly, Section 3 provides that an individual who has a set net permit for the Cook Inlet Central District is not necessarily entitled to a set net, to set net in the new administrative area created by the bill, unless that permit has been reassigned to the new administrative area. On page 2, section 4, we're amending the uncodified law of the state by adding a new section which provides how the commission will determine whether an individual who holds a set net entry permit in the Cook Inlet Central District is reassigned an entry permit for the new administrative area, which is established by previously discussed section 3. Or a portion of the Cook Inlet Central District that was not assigned to the administrative area. On page 3, section 5 amends the uncodified law of the state by adding a new section which defines the appeals process in the new administrative area. This section provides that a provisional license will be issued pending resolution of an appeal, and that the provisional permit holder may cast a provisional ballot in the election established in Section 6. Section 6, found on page 3, again amends the uncodified law by adding a new section which requires on April 1st an election be conducted by the commission among persons holding permits in the new administrative area to affirm support or opposition to the buyback program. It further requires the commission provide public notice of the election, hold public hearings concerning the election, and clarify the details of the buyback program to those participating in the election. On page 5, Section 7 begins by adding a new section which establishes the SetNet entry permit buyback program. This section will only take effect if approved by the election described in Section 6 of the bill. If it is approved, the buyback program will become law 30 days following notification of the Lieutenant Governor of the results of that election. Section 7 will further set qualifications for participation in the program, provides for buyback price for the permits, requires that the purchased permits be canceled and not reissued, provides that certain waters that were fished with the permits purchased under the program will be closed to future commercial salmon fishing, and specifies other details of the buyback program. On page 8, Section 8 begins, which is adding a new section which requires the commission to provide a written report to the legislature on the status of the program not later than January 5th in the current version of 2030. Section 9 amends the uncodified law of the state by adding a new section which requires the chair of the commission to provide to notify the lieutenant governor and the reviser of statutes of the outcome of the election described in Section 6. Section 10 is a sunset provision for the buyback program and repeals Sections 1, 2, 7, and 8 on June 30th, 2030. Section 11 amends the uncodified law of the state by adding a new section which provides that Sections 1, 2, 7, and 8 take effect only if the notice required under Section 9 that the buyback program was established under Section 6, the election. Basically, just another effective date section. Section 12 is an effective date clause requiring that the bill begin become effective on January 1st, 2024. Section 13 is another effective date clause, as well as Section 14. And that is the extent of the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. I'd like to welcome Senator Hoffman and Senator Stedman, who are away on important state business and has joined us a few minutes ago. We have any members of the committee or want to go ahead and either ask the bill's sponsor or his chief of staff any more questions on what has been presented so far? If not, we'll go ahead and start with invited testimony. First up is going to be Ken Coleman, Eastside Coalition Association, who is here in the audience. Please come on up and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony. Or go ahead and press presentation, I guess I should say.
Good afternoon, and thanks for hearing me today. My name is Ken Coleman. I'm from Kenai, Alaska. Senator Bjorkman is my senator, and pretty happy about that. Here today to talk about the SB 82 and present this brief presentation. And many of you have heard this before, and there are a few that here at the table today that have not gone through this, but some of them have been through at least once or in other committees as well. And so if I paraphrase, please indulge me, and I'll try to explain as I go. Please keep in mind that this presentation now is becoming, as things have started to change rapidly with the Board of Fish, as Senator Bjorkman mentioned, some of it's becoming a little less relevant So I'll try to point those out as I go. And with that, I'll launch right into it. The goals are pretty straightforward. I think Senator Bjorkman, in just about every way, explained what the program is and why. We're asking for your help in making a difference in a change in the way that isn't afforded to set netters, not only here but around the states, and with CFEC regulation as it currently is. So that's really the reason we're here, is to try to change something so that we can move forward with a program that we think makes much sense for it for now and into the future, and try to help a very distressed economic condition we find our fellow set netters in. So the Eastside Consolidation Association is a qualified salmon association under the regulations of the CFEC law for groups, not just this group, but any group that is seeking some change in their posture in terms of gear reduction or permit reduction. Page four is just a narrative about who we are as Eastside set netters. As you may see in the next page, page five, a very long-lived fishery in our cash economy, dating back to 1878. We've been around a long time. Our fishers, as Senator Bjorkman said, and our folks in our native community, who many of my friends, have been around doing this for far longer than that. So we've been around a long time. We hope to be around a long time into the future, albeit in a different posture. So we've been around a long time, the next slide is the Upper Cook Inlet Set Net area. Encompasses from basically Captain Cook State Park all the way down to Cape Nanilchik, some 60 miles, with several different stat areas. Cook Inlet, as you may or may not know, has five different districts. The district closest to Anchorage, which is called the Northern District, the west side of Cook Inlet, west side district, Caligan Island, about 15 miles west of Kenai, is the Caligan Island District. And believe it or not, there's a set net fishery in Ketchmack Bay called the Southern District. And then, of course, as we call it, the hot zone, which is the Eastside Set Net Group. And that is our fishery from top to bottom. I think everybody here understands what the limited entry program was. Many of our people in our fishery have original nets or permits, I should say, and many more don't, bought and sold and established their own businesses along the way, some for quite a lot and some for not quite a lot. It depends, and that depends on of course, the waxing and waning of the fishery itself. We grew from a primarily beach fishery into a large fishery, larger fishery in the mid-80s for particular reasons. Prices were the best then and the best they've ever been before or since. And there was a lot of fish. Two large stocking programs brought back a real bountiful harvest of red salmon. And so with that, we experienced this influx. We grew from perhaps 150 nets to, or permits, to about 440 as we are today. All legal, of course, all within the law. And we find ourselves without those stocking programs anymore. And so our biomass and our runs have returned to what we would say would be historical norms. And there's too many of us for the biomass we do have today, and that's again another driving force and why we were asking for your help. And here's another slide that speaks to what Mr. Jackson talked about, the new administrative area. CFEC regulation tells us that if you have an optimization study in a particular area, excuse me, that if you have an optimization study and you identify a number of permits that leave, then they have to be offered to all the fishery, not just of the one component, but all that fishery. And so, as I just explained, we've got five different districts. four of which aren't, there's no hue and cry from them to change things. But we have 440 permits on the east side, and that's what we call the hot zone. We have been in a fish war, at least I have, since 1977. And we're trying to find a creative way to work in the future, diffuse that. For one thing, I for one would like to see us work collaboratively and find a good way to get from here to the future. And this does that. We talk about 200 permits potentially leaving. Break from the slide for just a little bit, and Mr. Haight will be up to explain a study that he did that we asked him to do, and he was gracious enough to do with him and his staff. Identifies what it would take to prosecute the fishery today, with our access to the fishery, with the regulations that we have, and the price and the number of pounds that we get on a yearly basis, and with that he established a range of permits that could do this this fishery. It's actually to us means that we could take more permits out than 200 to get closer to the closer to a fishery that we think will be economically viable. That's a key. And also to find our way in this increasingly difficult world. We find ourselves in a very populated area of the state where we're all trying vying for some of the same resources. So Senator Bjorkman talked about the voluntary aspect of this. That's a main issue for us. We don't want to push people out. We want them to leave if they volunteer to. We've done several polls over the last several years. Everyone has been very, very positive to asking for a change. The last one was actually done by Mr. Jackson while he was still working for former Senator Michicki. And the 94, and I think we've got a typo there, 94.2% instead of 92.4 actually said, let's do something to help ourselves. And so that's, again, what we're trying to do. This also, this slide also speaks to a number of that we associated with the buyback. We took a hind cast for 10 years and affixed a number that reflects what a set net permits makes each year, a individual set net permit, and then times that by 10, and then actually added on some tax protection number at the end. Once again, with the study that Mr. Haight has done and the number of permits that we think can leave the fishery, those numbers are malleable. They don't have to be those numbers. And it was a few years ago, and as things have gotten exponentially worse, so too have the numbers relative to hindcast. They're defensible, but are they realistic in our fishery today? Likely not. So please keep that in mind. Fighting to remain viable, we are.
Excuse me. Yeah, I have a question on 13, just so I'm clear.
Sure.
So what says average earnings? I assume that's the net after operations multiplied by 10 plus taxes, or what's the average earnings? I don't know what that definition is.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that's correct.
Okay. Any follow-up, Senator Stedman?
I didn't hear the answer.
Oh, you said it was correct. Here, no. Go ahead and answer the question, if you would, Mr. Coleman.
Answer the question?
Answer the question, yes, please.
Okay. That was net after expenses.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And with a 10-year hindcast, Senator.
No, so that's the net average per year.
Yes, sir.
Times 10 times plus taxes.
Yes.
Go ahead with your presentation, Mr. Coleman.
Pardon me?
Go ahead with your presentation.
Okay. Fighting to remain viable, we continue to try to find creative and solution-oriented ways to make sure that our fishermen have the opportunity for economic viability. Obviously, it is not a guarantee, and we understand that. This is a family business, and one of the slides actually showed me with two of my grandkids on our fishing sites. And it is a great fishery, and it's a family-oriented enterprise, and it's something that I treasure with my family. My two sons grew up from infancy to responsible adults. I don't know how that happened, but they sure did. And some of it was because they were fishermen on the beach with myself and my wife. So we approached our folks at which we used to not be able to have any dialogue with in the sport fishery, and as a way to try to find a way to a solution oriented collaboration, we actually made inroads to ask them to come to luncheon and began a conversation which we continued. I wouldn't call us the best of friends, but we can collaborate now. We have discussions, had a discussion with a gentleman on the plane this morning on the way. And it's been fruitful. I no longer see each other in a store and call each other names. We actually have the same conversation, and I think we're all headed the same way. We'd sure like to. I think you'll find on page 18 a poignant letter from Aaron Meese Hermanson, whose family fishes on Humpy Point and you can see off forever, and they've been there for generation after generation. And so in the final analysis, what we're hearing, and you've heard this before, is that, as I mentioned, there are two key things that we think could possibly change. One is the numbers of permits. It makes more sense to get to a fishery that is going to be financially viable. I think Senator Bjorkman very much did a good job explaining that to you. And the closed area, if this unfolds in the way we envision it, the closed area is superfluous. It really doesn't have to work that way. And I think that eases a lot of people's minds. We wouldn't have to have a closed area. People won't be migrating around. They'll be in their traditional sites. And we hope that that's clearly understood. And we're asking you and the Finance Committee, this is a tool to help us help ourselves. And that's what we're really here asking for. For 440 families that are it's difficult to see their way of life going away. And this is one way to preserve that. I thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. Next we have up is Mr. Glenn Haight. Mr. Haight, please come on up and give us your testimony, please. He's with the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Spill it. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of Senate Finance. My name is Glenn Haight. I serve as one of the commissioners with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Thanks for the opportunity to come today. I thought I'd just offer some comments about the bill as it relates to CFEC and speak to a few things, a few elements of it, if that's okay. In terms of implementing the bill, I think it's fairly straightforward for CFEC. Senator Machicki had long consulted previous commissioners and the Department of Law, and any concerns they had about it were discussed. I think that the end product is what I would call prescriptive. It tells us what to do. It removes a lot of the risk. CFEC, basically what this is doing is it's creating a limited fishery. And when CFEC had done this in the past, they had to do things like cite the maximum number of permits, list a qualification period, and establish a points system. And all of these things would create risk for CFEC and would lead to lawsuits and things like that. This takes away most all of that. I mean, we really are just implementing what's on the paper. I think the timeline is quick, but it's something we can do. So just as it relates to our work, I think it's pretty simple. So it does create a new administrative area. And that's important because in order to keep the other Cook Inlet set netters out of this particular area, you have to limit this fishery. So once you've done that, someone could buy into the fishery, but they have to buy some of the existing permits. And so that is of some concern for other people in other parts of the region. Certainly, if you have a vessel-based operation, you don't want to have your existing management area limited like that, because then you wouldn't be able to move all around the area. But I don't think that's the case or a concern, really. This is a very unique situation. A group of longtime harvesters have been in this area. And so they're calling for some relief. Buyback is an interesting concept, and some have mixed feelings about this. I'm not sure when the first first person talked about commercial fisheries and buybacks in that same context, but it has been part of the Limited Entry Act since it was formed. So in as it was envisioned, CFEC would issue a certain number of permits, and then after a while, go back, do an optimum number study, and if it got the number wrong, perhaps too many permits, it would go back and establish a buyback. The typical process for this was a tax on the existing participants. This has never happened in our history. There's been a couple buybacks in more recent history. In the 2000s, you had the salmon fishery, purse seine fishery in Southeast had a buyback. And then also the Bering Sea crab fishery had buybacks around the same time. And they used the federal system to implement that. We've talked about the report a little bit, and I just would offer a few observations on that. Turn to it here. One thing that I found, what we wanted to do in the report to some degree was offer you an idea about what the fisheries were like in the six areas on the east side. Because I think they're very unique and different in their nature. So that was part of the purpose of that. And we did, page 25, just to point it out to you, really, I found this interesting. We just got the number of hours fished by this fleet from Fish and Game over time. And in the 80s, when things were really good, they had about 500 hours of fishing time this season. It's down to about 200 now, more recently. So you can see a significant amount of time has been reduced for this fleet. And that's related to shifting allocations. We did come up with a range of permits that could fish, and that's on page 31. Didn't offer you an optimum number. I don't know what that is. I can tell you the optimum number of set net permits on the east side when they can't fish is zero, right? But it just depends what kind of allocation they have, how much fishing opportunity they can take advantage of. So we offered a range at various prices based on certain harvest levels, how many fish could how many permits could enjoy a minimal return. We did ask that question. It was like, to the permit holders, what would you want to make per permit to stay in this fishery? The average we got back was about $15,000 a permit. And so based on that, we were able to calculate at a certain price how many permits could fish at certain harvest levels, if that makes sense. Mr. Chair, those are some of the more immediate comments. Happy to take any questions.
We have any questions for Mr. Haight? Senator Stedman.
Just for clarification, did you say $15,000? That was a required amount they would like to make, $15,000?
Mr. Haight.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. That is after tax, after all expenses, what would you like to make per permit?
Are they making now?
As a net, I don't have that information in front of me. We could find the gross per permit, but.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, and then do we have any other fisheries in the state that have any problems with sizes and
number of permits that are out there?
Number of permits, revenue.
Mr. Haight, is this the only fishery
that has an issue?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, there's a number of fisheries throughout the state where you don't see all the permits getting fished. I don't have any in front of me that are having this level of difficulty. And this is a unique situation. We've got a lot of user groups and resources been allocated away from this particular segment. I don't know that I'm answering your question, but happy to
follow up.
So there's another one. What provisions do we have? Maybe the bill sponsor, the aide could help. What provisions do we have to ensure we don't have front running and other issues that we faced with the Southeast buyback, which was quite frankly about one step away from being crooked?
Senator Bjorkman, do you have an answer to that? Or do you have access to that kind of information?
Thank you. I want to clarify the question, Mr. Chair, Senator Jesse Bjorkman, for the record, through the chair, Senator Stedman. Are you asking if people are able to speculate on permits and then make money with this program? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, pretty much. I want to see what kind of provisions are in place to prevent a repeat of what we had in the Southeast buyback, which, frankly, in my opinion, was one step away from being crooked. And that's why we haven't had a lot of buyback issues before us.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, there's a provision in this bill that requires that these permits have been fished for 4 years, I believe, prior to being eligible to be a participant in this buyback program. So a permit has to have been fished. It has to have been active in order to be eligible. And I think it's worth pointing out that most of the fishermen in these areas that we're talking about and these beaches, they have had zero fishing time. When we look at the beach north of the Kenai River, they're the last user group. They have had zero fishing time. This past year, they were closed down for the entire year. Zero. The year before that, you had many, many fishing sites spend all the money to invest to get ready for the season. And most of those fishermen got 0 hours of fishing time because of allocation decisions made by the state, because of conservation decisions made by Fish and Game, whereas other user groups got to enjoy some level of access to the resource, meaning sockeye salmon. They got incidental catch of Chinook salmon in their fisheries. These user groups are unique because they got zero access. They got zero opportunity at revenue, and that's why this fishery is unique and uniquely eligible for a buyback program. And unfortunately, there are a few people out there, as you saw from the survey results, a vast minority of people that are against this program. Number one, they hate set netters and have always hated set netters, and they don't care about the $50 to $75 million impact every summer that this fishery has on our economy. Or they're looking for old times of the 1980s to return, and they're gone, never to return.
Follow-up, Senator Sedman.
I'm just a little confused. So you're saying that there's a lot of the set netters that have zero income? And then how do you get the average? Can you get back to the committee with how that's all calculated? How many permits there are, how many fish, what the gross is, and what the expected net is?
Do you have the answer to that, Mr. Heath?
Chair, yes, Senator Stedman. In terms of the report that we did, it was, previously CFPC had attempted to do the Oppen Number Study in 2019. And, an Oppen Number Study can be a very invasive process where you would actually send a survey out to each individual. You'd ask them for 3 years, how much you pay in gas, how much you pay in nets, food, things like that. It was very detailed, and they did not get back strong answers to the questions. And so when I came on in 22, faced with trying to do this again, we asked the set netters, do you want us to try to do this? And they said yes. And so instead of using that financial scalpel, we just used a cleaver of sorts. And so I asked three questions. It was, what's your break-even cost? They all seem to know that. By the way, they fish in groups. They're all unique. It's not like a vessel operation where there's differences in vessels, but generally you can draw fair assumptions and make one-to-one. But these guys fish in groups, anywhere from 2 to 10 permits in one operation. So the arrangements they have internally, that's up to them. So we asked the question, what's your break-even analysis? What's your fixed cost? And how much do you want to make at the end of the day in your permit? And from that, we could figure out a variable cost and apply it up to a point where we found out that desired amount of money they want to make. And that's sort of how we approach that. So you won't find this information, at what's the average gross. It won't relate so well to other fisheries. And it's an ideal question. What would you like to make as a minimum? That's what we put to them.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman?
No.
Mr. Jackson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman. If I could take a run at Senator Stedman's question, the value, the $20,000 per year, 10-year hindcast, was the result of looking at a normal fishing year, the anomalous years such as last year where they had 0 hours fishing, or a couple of years prior to that where they may have had 12 or 24 hours total for the entire summer. These were fishing years when fishing was actually taking place on a regular basis, more traditionally, as opposed to the anomalies, the disasters, the years when the runs would fall apart, where they versus, again, this last year, where they were not granted the opportunity to put a single net in the water.
Okay. Mr. Haight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question that I think Senator Stedman had was really to how you deal with speculators and the reference to the Southeast Purse Seine Salmon buyback. After talking to Senator Stephan last year, I went back and looked at that a little bit, who sold permits in that process. And in fact, there were some people who took part in that who had never purse seined before, and some who rarely fished. I think this bill prevents that in that it's asking for four different things to prove that you were involved in the fishery. The thing to note about the Eastside Set Net group is that they have to register in advance of a fishery each year, and they can't move once they do that. And so that's information what Fish and Game has. The other element that we would look to judge their participation is whether they had a delivery, also if they had a shoreside lease, and if they had buoy tags. Probably buoy tags is the one thing that would be the most telling that someone was actually active. So you fish in groups, and because of that, not everyone who's fishing who has a permit fishing in that group is going to show a fisheries delivery, because an individual is going to take the fish to the buyer, and it's their permit that fish is going to be assigned to. So using fish deliveries as a indication of who all was participating isn't perfect. So there's a number of different elements the bill has that we could look at to see who are the active participants for each year.
Senator Stedman.
So we've got numerous fisheries along the coast of, frankly, Dixon Entrance, clear to Nome, that are in trouble. Yeah. So is this going to be the model for buybacks that we're going to face up and down the coast? Or what precedents are we potentially setting here with this buyback versus the other fisheries?
Mr. Haight?
Yeah, through the chair. Senator Stebbins, good question. I think what you're seeing in Cook Inlet, you'll see everywhere at some point. And, of course, in some regions, we're not having fish return, which is a whole other dire issue, right, that could deserve as much attention as this. I think what we do in Cook Inlet should inform what we do 10 years from now in other areas. If we don't think this is going to happen at Bristol Bay, I think that's foolish. So whether or not it's a buyback, I don't know if that's what a region wants. Maybe there's other solutions that could address an allocation issue. But absent a durable allocation for a region and for commercial fisheries, it will be a problem everywhere. I know that folks in SetNet on the east side of Cook Inlet, this is what they think will help them. So I think that's probably the debate that you all have.
Senator Brookman, you want to comment on that concern that Senator Stedman has?
Thank you, Chair Olson. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, through this process and this bill, this is a way for the commercial SetNet fishery in Cook Inlet to survive. Without a measure like this, the SetNet fishery on the east side of Cook Inlet will be gone, and its economic benefits and opportunities will be gone with it. For summer after summer, families are on those beaches and kids are on those beaches working together and learning to work and learning about all the skills that come with SetNet fishing. I'm not sure what's going to happen around the state, but I am sure what's happening in my own community. And we have been suffering for years now a lack of $50 to $75 million in our local economy every year for the last 7 years, because the vast majority of that time, that economic opportunity and activity has not taken place. So if we don't act, if we don't have a program similar to this, then the economic opportunity number from our east side SetNet fishery will be zero because of allocation decisions that have been made by the Board of Fish and conservation actions taken on the behalf of the Department of Fish and Game. And so as we look at each fishery needs to be managed independently to maximize the benefit for all Alaskans. That's what we're called to do here. And right now, we have an economic benefit from our SetNet fishery of zero. I would like that number to be substantially more than zero. And I believe that this model of legislation provides for an avenue to that. Thank you.
Bob Sessler?
Help me with the issue. If you take the gear and you cut it in half, you have a prosperous fishery and a fishery. If you don't have any changes, you don't have any fisheries. Are people going to, if it's no economic base to it, will they not stop fishing? And sir, other folks will still fish? Or it just seems like the way it's explained, it's a switch. current system, nobody fishes. If you cut the gear in half, everybody prospers. It doesn't add up. I'm having trouble with the concept.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, as we reduce the amount of gear in the water, the ability to fish that gear by Fish and Game through management decisions increases because less king salmon will be encountered and taken, as well as less sockeye salmon will be taken in that fishery as well. The opportunity to reduce salmon run to the river with that fishery is significantly reduced, allowing Fish and Game the opportunity to fish that fishery more. That's the trade-off. And so, especially considering the work done by Mr. Hayton, CFEC, with this optimization study, as requested, we bring the number of permits down even further. That should allow for more opportunity for that lesser amount of permits to fish more. And I understand that there's other concerns out there about what that means, but in the end, a system that allows all user groups to fish and the economic benefit to exist from that is a system for the greater good, in my opinion.
Bob, Senator Stedman,
I missed the beginning of the meeting because I was at another one, but can you remind me what the market value of the permit is? And then if I buy one and play around for 4 years, turn it into the buyback, what kind of margin that is?
Mr. Hayden, do you have that number?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the permit's an interesting metric to look at. It's currently anywhere between 15,000 and 16,000. Looked at that, permits are pretty volatile based on the health of the resource and the price, and you can see a lot of swings in those permit values. And that certainly was the case with this permit in the 90s. You know, it was as high as inflation proof, as high as $220,000 as the sales price, down to $40,000. But it swung around in the 90s. But come 2000 and what you saw, a crash in the salmon market, it dipped below 20,000 and has been as low as 11,000, but up to 22, 23. But it really hasn't moved much. It's very strange, interesting buying behavior from people. And I don't know, we could do a deep dive on why that is, but I suspect it's because Mr. Coleman speaks to it. The permit is part of an operation, a broader operation, where you have a unique makeup of people involved. And there are a lot of land-based assets on there. The permit is essential, of course, but there's a broader operation that sort of creates the value. I think that's what he was speaking to. But the permit itself has been pretty low, but I don't know that that's the best thing to look at. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman. Through the chair, Senator Stedman, if your hypothetical is that you could potentially go buy a permit and start doing a little fishing now and participate in the program, to use a fishing analogy, that ship has sailed. It's a very short period of time between the effective date of the bill, the beginning of the program, and when Mr. Hyatt and CFEC will begin collecting applications, draw at random for the participation in the program, and that's closed.
So that's, I think what I'm hearing you say is that opportunity doesn't exist the way it's structured.
That's correct.
The profiteering mechanism is closed.
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, I direct the committee's attention, Mr. Chairman, to page 6 of the bill. On the top of page 6, the bill clearly states that a person has to have held a permit since at least the 1st of January 2020. That closes the door to speculation. You have to have held a permit and fished the permit in order to be eligible for the program. This does not allow, and it's written in such a way that it specifically does not allow the speculation to occur. You have to have held a permit since January 1st of 2020.
Senator Stedman.
No, it's actually a positive.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this bill sponsor, his trustee aide, or Mr. Haight from CFEC? No, thank you very much for coming up. We'll go to next one is Mr. Lauren Lehman from, who's online. Are you on, Mr. Lehman?
Hi, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. You can hear me just fine.
You're coming in loud and clear.
I'm Lauren Lehman. I live in Anchorage most of the year. My wife and I do spend several weeks in Nanilchik, my hometown. And I'll just say, as an aside, I miss being there at the finance table with you and Senator Hoffman. And I did swear in Senator Steadman the first time he took the oath of office. But I want to provide some brief testimony. I support this legislation. And as you've heard from Ken Coleman and others, it has broad support in the Cook Inlet set net fishery. I was raised in Nanilchik and have participated in the set net fishery since statehood. Before that time, my father, Nick Lehman, operated a fish trap in the same area. And unfortunately, fish traps were outlawed when Alaska became a state. I'd say just think about what we could do with selective harvesting if we allowed them. And, of course, with local ownership, that was the knock against traps back then. My grandfather, Joe Lehman, fished an adjacent area before that. So it's fair to say that the Lehman family has been fishing this area at the southern end of what you saw as 244-21 for most of the past 110 years. During the past 40 years, we've seen a reallocation of the salmon resource, which essentially has been a taking, and especially during the last 6 years, or perhaps seven, we have been limited by gear reduction and early closure of the set net fishery, ostensibly to protect the large Kenai River kings, which we seldom, if ever, catch. And to add insult to injury, our 2023 season didn't open at all, and the same is threatened for the 24 season. So something needs to be done. Well, Senate Bill 82 is a bold approach to secure a voluntary reduction of gear, which will help with management and increase the opportunity for those who continue to participate in fishing. And you likely will hear from a few fishermen who oppose this bill. They don't believe the root problem is the number of permits operating along the 60 miles of beach from Nanilchik to Nikiski. Rather, they assert that the real problem is misguided policies by the Board of Fisheries that have led to the disaster we have today. Well, I agree with them about that. But if we do nothing, our set net fishery will soon be bankrupt and become a sad relic of the past, just like the fish trap. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions for Mr. Lehman by members of the committee? Senator Steadman.
Just a reminder, I think one of the major reasons why we became a state was to get rid of the fish traps.
Oh, I know that. And that's what I said. If we had the trap, with local ownership. The knock on fish traps, the primary knock was they were owned by outside fishing interests, processors. And the fish trap itself and how they're managed, it could have been done, could be done very well. You have, like, for example, today, if you caught a king in a fish trap, and my father did catch kings in his fish trap, but you could release them, and they'd be totally unharmed. So anyway, I'm well aware of the story behind it. I remember when that election took place. I remember how sad my dad was to, you know, when that way of life for him was taken away.
Well, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Lauren. It's good to hear your voice again.
Oh, thank you. Good to be with you, and thanks for considering this.
Okay. Next up is Tim Keener from Kenai. Mr. Keener, are you on, sir?
Hello, it's Tim Keener. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Tim Keener. I'm a third-generation set netter here in Cook Inlet on the east side. Also a proud Tlingit. I fish approximately 3 miles south of the Kenai River. I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 82. I've been a proponent of this bill since its inception, which I took part in from the beginning. It's very simple in that it solves the issues we have as no longer being financially viable, solves the conservation problem we have in the Kenai River, lack of king salmon. I might add that it will not cost the state any money, which is a good thing, as funding is through the federal NOAA Gear Capacity Reduction Program. You can also add in there that we've spoken with some private donors that are large companies, and through this program, they can also donate money. And we're here to ask simply that you pass this bill, which would allow us to offer this program to set netters in specific section, which we've gone over, of the beaches along Cook Inlet, primarily from Boulder Point to Nanilchik. It's the families that fish this area are now in crisis. We're not fishing at all. And I think that regulations that were passed at the Board of Fish over the last 20 years have restricted us down to that now. And the bottom line is they can't turn loose 440 permits in this area when king returns are low, and we simply have too large of an impact. This bill would allow us a chance to drastically reduce the king salmon catch in our fleet and leave approximately 100 permits that could become viable again economically. In my opinion, it's a very logical, socio-economic, and scientific approach to a major fishery problem that's plagued our area and peninsula for years. I want to thank you guys for allowing us to talk to you about it today. I know there's been some really good questions. I hope that most of those have been answered in your minds. We've been over this thing for the past close to going on 10 years now. We've had the bill here so many times before, and I appreciate you guys giving us another shot at it. I think we've got a lot more pertinent information because we've taken our time on this, but our time has run out as far as I can see. We got families that are just floundering here, and this whole program would work for us and create a situation where the families that want to exit the fishery could do that with some dignity. And the ones that remain that want to fish would have a shot at making a living fishing again. And this fishery that means so much to all of us would remain here. We have this long history. My father was one of the crafters of the limited entry. He was also involved in leases. So I know the kind of struggles we've gone through as a state and as commercial fishermen to grow into what we are today. But we're in a changing world. Just in my lifetime, the population in our area has at least tripled. So everybody wants these fish, and by law, they're entitled to a chance at catching them. And so we, as commercial fishermen, are ready to take on our part of it, reduce our fleet, help that process out, and hopefully it's a win-win for all the parties involved. This is the first time that we've worked really hand-in-hand with Kenai River Sport Fish Association, Ken and myself, with Ricky Gies primarily at the start of this, to come up with a plan that we could all agree on. We were told by Senator Murkowski, who, by the way, wants to fund this thing, and Sullivan's office, he also has been very helpful, that in order for us to move forward, we had to get along with those guys and do it together. So I want to thank them for that. And I think that's a good example of what could happen in the future. So once again, thank you. I'm glad you're hearing this thing again today. I want to thank Jesse Bjorkman, our senator, for helping us with this and taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you got a lot of stuff going on with budget. But this is really important to a lot of Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next we have up is Sarah Frosted. Ms. Frosted, are you on, ma'am?
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, my name is Sarah Frosted-Hudkin. I'm a third generation commercial fisherman on Salamettoff Beach. I'm a Kenaitse tribal member, and I'm also a board member for Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. My statement today represents myself, my family, and our family's 100-year-old legacy. My grandfather came to Kenai in the early 1920s, and he did work the fish traps for Libby McNeil and Libby. I currently fish on the same plot of land where he began 100 years ago. The remnants of the old traps can be seen at low tide, which is a reminder of the deep history that surrounds our fishery. And our beach cabin is actually made out of portions of the fish trap once it was dismantled. Recent years have devastated our fishery, as you've heard by the other testifiers before me. And SB 82 could leave a core group of fishermen to have the opportunity for financial stability and the opportunity to continue many generational fisheries. My grandparents and my parents have all passed away, but my husband and our three children and our three grandchildren all strive to continue our family's legacy. It's not just our livelihood, it's who we are. And we ask for your support. I do thank you guys for hearing us today, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Ms. Frostad. Next we have up is Lisa Gabriel. Ms. Gabriel, are you on, ma'am?
Thank you very much. My name is Lisa Gabriel, and I'm a lifetime Alaskan, and I live in Kenai. I'm testifying today on behalf of myself, and I am in support of SB 82. My husband, Brian, and I have owned and operated our family set net site on Kalibrinsky Beach since 1987. We invested in the fishery as young adults. We were not born into this way of life, but we chose it. We now harvest, process, and direct market our own catch, as well as sell to the local processors if we fish. For the past 36 years, we have worked with our children and now have the honor of working beside our small grandchildren and my 80-plus-year-old parents. Each family member, regardless of age, has a job and a value on our FetNet site. My husband and I are the stewards of the number one and number two shore fisheries leases in Cook Inlet. These legacy sites have been fished by only a couple families since territorial days. They fished beside the fish trap and survived after statehood. I wish I knew all the stories they could tell. SB 82 was brought forward at the request of FetNet fishermen in hopes of revitalizing our family fishing businesses and bringing them back to life. It offers fair compensation to fishermen who voluntarily choose to participate in a fleet reduction and exit the fishery. It offers a chance for financial viability and stability for those fishermen, such as myself, who choose to remain. It's fair and entirely voluntary. In the past 20 years, the fishing opportunity for the Eastside Setnet family fishing families has declined dramatically. The increased pressure on the resource by all users has left our nets high and dry on the Eastside Setnet beaches for the better part of our season. And in 2023, we were closed for the entire fishing season. I believe SB 82 is the long-awaited solution and the regulatory mechanism necessary for the longevity of the financially viable Eastside Setnet fishery. Those of us who choose to remain in this historic fishery will have the opportunity to continue to fish beside our families with viability and predictability, and will be allowed to continue to write our family Setnet stories well into the future. I encourage the committee to support SB 82. It clears a fair and equitable path forward for the meaningful existence and viability of the Eastside Setnet fishery. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Ms. Gabriel. I'd like to go ahead and open up to public testimony. Do we have anybody in the room that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? If not, we'll go to the online people. We're going to have to stop at 3 o'clock, so I'll give a two-minute limit for everybody that's going to be calling in. First up is Gary Holier. Mr. Holier, are you on, sir?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senate Finance Committee. My name is Gary Holier, 70-year lifelong resident of Kenai. My family owns 9 Setnet permits. The first one I received from Limited Entry cost $0. The most expensive one I bought was $105,000 in 1990 that I bought from a gentleman on the west side in Tyonic. We're 100% in favor of this gear reduction. I also have a Setnet buying station for OBI Seafoods. About 6 years ago, I polled our members, the permits that sold to me, 48 sold there, 100% were in favor of this, of which 32 said they would definitely put their name in for a lottery. I'm sure that number is higher after the last 7 years of virtually no fishing. I listened to HB 195, a companion bill, the other day. There was 23 people in support of this bill, and I pretty virtually knew every one of them. They encompassed about 100 Eastside set net permits. There was five people in opposition, all drifters. I don't know why they're opposed to it, in one set netter. This bill is basically just asking to change an administrative area so that the Eastside set net fishery numbers can be reduced and have a viable economic fishery in the future. The Eastside set netter is 84% Alaska residents, of which almost 80% live in the Kenai Peninsula borough. As legislature, I would think you would want to help residents of Alaska who are, all we're trying to do is help ourselves. Change the administrative area to CFEC. I thank Mr. Haight tremendously for his optimization study. Long overdue. I thank Mr. Bjorkman. I thank Representative Ruckridge for carrying the water on this bill. This has been going on for about 10 years now. We're not asking for a whole lot. We're not asking for any money. We're just asking change the CFPC regulations to make a new administration area so that we can go out and find money to help ourselves and the people left behind can be solvent. And thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Hollier. Next up is Gary Diamond. Mr. Diamond, are you on, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and
My name is Gary Diamond, and I live in Nanilchik, above my set net site. I'm a longtime set netter. My family's been fishing here since 1970, and I've got 44 years in here myself. And our family has 9 permits. I have a couple permits, my wife, my daughters, my wife's sister, and her father. It's a long-time family set net operation, and we've been regulated out of business, and they've bankrupted our fishing operation. Please pass this legislation and bring some relief to the Eastside set netters of the Cook Inlet. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Diamond. Next is Alan Crookston. Mr. Crookston, are you on, sir?
Yes. Again, my name is Alan Crookston. I own and operate Tide Chaser Fisheries, which currently holds 4 set net permits. I'm the 5th site north of the Kenai River. My family has fished these permits and waters for over 60 years, and they were fished before we purchased them in the 1960s. So yeah, I'm also in favor of SB 82. I now have a set net site that I cannot fish, and I practically cannot sell. I have no way to harvest sockeye like I have done in previous decades. This is the same for all of my set net neighbors around me. We're all stuck. The status quo can't continue, or we'll be starved out. I'm literally on my last year. My slush fund is gone. The past few years, I've had to sell off large pieces of equipment just to make ends meet. I'm in favor of the set net buyback bill because it will allow for many set netters to receive some sort of recovery for their sites and businesses, which have effectively been taken from them, and they can reinvest in other sectors, maybe other fisheries or whatnot. It'll also allow for a younger core, younger generation of set netters like myself to stay and fish and be successful. I hear, you know, there is some division on this bill, but again, those that want to stay have the right to stay, and those that would like to voluntarily be entered into the buyback can do so. This bill will not cost the state any money to pass, but not passing this bill, I believe, will have a significantly negative impact on the Kenai Peninsula. I mean, I usually spend around $30,000 every summer just to get my operation up and going there in the local economy. I'm not going to do that anymore. And when the fishing is good, all that money goes to local deckhands, local families, and so forth. So again, having a reduced core of set netters will continue to pump money into the local economy. It'll support the local processors. It'll put good fish into market for consumption. and it will give the fish and game a tool to help regulate these massive over escapements in the Kenai River, which I think will continue to hurt the river. So I believe we need SB 82. Another thing I just want to mention is, you know, during the 80s, when there were more permits, you didn't have this massive personal use fishery and unregulated number of permits of it for the in-river fishery, the commercial in-river fishery, the guys. Now the personal use fishery has exploded. The in-river fishery has exploded exponentially.
Mr. Crookston, your time is up, sir. We're not going to be able to get to everybody if we keep on going.
Sure. So thank you. I am in favor of this legislation. Thank you.
Next up is Douglas Blossom. Mr. Blossom, are you on, sir?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead with your 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, my name is Douglas Blossom. I'm a lifetime resident of Manilchik. I'm 63 years. Some of you know me as Doug Jr., probably. Dad's name was my grandpa and my dad started fishing here in the early 50s. They both helped on traps there before then. My grandparents came up here in 1948. I have four children that grew up on the SetNet site. I'm third generation. They're fourth generation. I have three grandsons that would be fifth generation, but we haven't been allowed fishing time. So I don't know if that's going to happen in the future. I'm definitely for this bill. I think it helps ones that want to stay. Maybe it'll be viable, and some that want to get out. One thing I will say is I think I don't like the number of 200. I think it should be, whoever wants to get out should have the opportunity. Whoever wants to stay should have the opportunity to stay. Our fish have been totally allocated to different user groups over the last few years. We first went down to 229 mesh nets instead of three nets, and it's just a fishery that's not feasible to do anymore the way it's going on. And it doesn't look to have a good future with the poor king salmon return. So if this is what it takes to help save some king salmon and help save the fishery, I'm 100% for this bill 82.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next we have up is Russell Clark. Mr. Clark, go ahead with your 2 minutes, please.
Yes, my name is Russell Clark. I'm from Kenai. So is my wife. I'm speaking in on behalf of my family, who, between all of us, daughters, father-in-law, me and my wife, we have 7 Cook Inlet permits. We've been fishing 20-something years. First, what I'd like to, I'd kind of like to go down a different path right here. We are for SB 82, but please understand, the set netters have been fighting for years. Y'all need to know what we have tried to do. We have picketed. We stood on street corners with signs trying to get the fish. We have had city council meetings with hundreds of people in Kenai, Soldotna. At those city council meetings, the commissioner was there. Board of Fish members were there. Legislatures were there. Members that the governor sent were there, and they sat out in front of us, and they overlooked hundreds of faces, where each one of these faces represented a significant economic impact to the community. And they did nothing. Every one of these meetings, our city council members have written letters to the governor's office, the Board of Fish. Many of us set netters have submitted ACRs and proposals to the Board of Fish trying to get the fish. Nothing has happened. We met Senator Bjorkman at one of these meetings. He said he's going to try to help us. And that's what he's doing. Now we have got to try to get this done through the legislature, because Nobody else is going to do it. Each one of these people that whenever the commissioner looked out over these large gatherings at city council meetings, that's tens of thousands of dollars each one of us has lost, and some of us into hundreds of thousands of dollars. That is money that did not go into the community.
Mr. Clark, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next one we have up is Greg Johnson. Mr. Johnson, are you on, sir?
Hi, my name is Greg Johnson. I fish in the middle of Kaliforski Beach, which is directly between the Kusilok and Kenai River. We fish six licenses. My family owns six licenses, my wife and two sons. I've been in the fishery since 1981. I guess what I'd like to bring forth is a good example. As the politics grew in the mid-80s, they put a dividing line on that beach. It's never existed for the first 100 years. And the purpose was to allocate to decrease the catch of Chinook over the full season. So you fast forward in multiple reductions or increases in escapements and allocation changes. And with all the early 2000s, if you fish north of that line where we do, you got on average 15 days a year. And if you fish south of it, you got 28 days. So then you move forward another 10 years, and well, the guys down south were down to 10, and we were down to 5. And you've heard the stories the last couple of years of no fishing or very limited hours. The point is, this fishery needs to reset desperately based upon the taking of an allocation from one group to another and with no reset in place. And so I think that's where it's at today. My family, we would hope to hold on to a couple licenses and stay in the fight. It's a two-stage fight. It's the first one is to reduce the fishery, to reduce the impact because the needs and the allocation that is held in river and within the different fishery. And then lastly, the second step is we'll have to take that argument back to the Board of Fish and describe how we've reduced our impact and how that we can fish and with less impact, and the story goes on. But anyway, I hope you support this bill. This is a long-standing issue. The Kings can return tomorrow and we'll still be in trouble here. So I'm not afraid of shortfalls in resource, because we've had them plenty of times, different years with sockeye and different years with coho. And now it's this Chinook thing that is very painful right now. I don't discredit that, but, the real issue is the total management plan. And, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Johnson. Next is Teague Vanek. Mr. Vanek, are you on, sir?
Yes, hello. This is Teague Vanek. I'm from the Nilchik. I've lived here my whole life and fished almost all my whole life. And, you know, I know a lot of these set netters. I'm not a set netter, but I am a commercial fisherman here. I have set netted. I had a site for a while. I'm opposed to this. I don't see that buying back and buying out a fishery here, or starting to buy out a fishery, is the answer to the mismanagement that the state has done on this fishery. I really honestly believe that those, almost to a person, that all the people that testify for this claim that the people that are left are going to have a better time of it. And I can't see how they see that. You know, I think that the legislature, if they really wanted to help this fishery and help the participants in this fishery, they would do legislation that would put sideboards on what the Board of Fisheries can do. You know, if you really delve into the crazy, insane rules that they've put on the set netters and really all of us, you know, things like the 1% rule, the windows, the paired restrictions, and the list goes on and on. And if the legislature really wants to help this fishery, they would do something about the runaway Board of Fisheries. And by doing this, buyback program, they are not going to get more fishing time. They'll never get fishing time as long as the Board of Fish is allowed to do things like say, oh, we're only going to count the third or less than half of the kings, and but we're still going to want to try to get, you know, 15 or 30,000 of them in the river when they don't even count them all. And that's got to change before anything positive will happen for this fishery. So,
Mr. Vanek, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next up, we have Ted Crookston. Mr. Crookston.
Yes, hello. My name is Ted Crookston. About 60 years of history there, fishing as a set netter. I want to just hit a couple of key points here. I know you're out of time. One is that the concerns about this being a gambling affair, something that could be crooked, just simply is not an issue. This is not relevant in this case. This is a very unique situation that we have, and this is a very creative and unique solution that's been put together. One thing that has not come up, and it actually plays into the last caller about saying, well, how can this create more opportunity for those that remain? Something that's not clear perhaps to the board members that aren't fishermen is that when this influx of other permits came into the area in the 80s, all those nets moved away from near shore fisheries into the outside area and filled up the big delta area outside and in between the two rivers. Well, the economics of this make it so that those that are going to want to get out are going to retire those permits, and this will naturally result in a more historical return to a near shore set net fishery where there's high numbers of sockeye caught near shore and a significantly reduced number of king salmon caught. So it will impact the big trigger that has been occurring in this fishery, which is the interception of the king salmon to an unacceptable level. So it will make a difference there. I support this bill, and I think that it's timely and a good idea. So thank you for your time.
Mr. Crookston, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next we have up is Steve Vanek. Mr. Vanek, are you on, sir?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. Yeah, I just have a few questions that you can ponder. Where is the money coming from? And that was stated that the state isn't going to put any money into it. But what is the CFEC $100,000 for 4 years? What's that for? And then if the money comes from the federal government and buys back these permits, then that makes the permits property. And you better think about that, because as Lauren Lehman said, we've had a takings of our permits and our fishing. Now, the other thing is king salmon were not saved this year. And nobody fished. So the other question is, where do these set netters think that they're going to be allowed to fish? There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee that the set netters are ever going to fish again. And then they better start listening to that, because they think, oh, yeah, we're going to fish that. We're going to be able to fish. But no, you're not going to be able to fish. Now, there's other alternatives, which the man just ahead of me said. Why not close the waters beyond a half a mile? And the permits will have to go somewhere else where they came from to start with. So, you know, the nearshore fishery is what I remember. I've been fishing here for 60 years and drifting. And so this was before limited entry, and I have still my limited entry permit. And then the other one questions, who determines where the permits were fished when the permit is going to be taken out and that area that where it fished is going to be closed? who decides that? All right, I'm done.
Mr. Vanek, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next up we have is Joanne and David Wickers.
Thank you.
My name is Joanne Wickers, and I've been an Eastside Set Netter in Cook Inlet since 1986. Our family operation fishes 5 permits, and I'm in support of SB 82. I love being a set netter, and I never miss a tide in a skiff. Our boys grew up on the beach, and we hoped that we could fish in the good and the bad years, because that's fishing, and then pass our operation on to our sons and their families. All set netters need is opportunity to fish to make it. Unfortunately, recently, the opportunity for us is bare to none. I'm in support of SB 82 because I believe that this will help and perhaps save our fishery, unlike some of the naysayers out there. For those that want to stay there, they can fish, and there'll be less competition. There'll be less nets outside them. Hopefully, they'll be on the beach, and the fish can get to the beach, and it'll be better. And hopefully, there's more opportunity with the less nets in the water. And it's also going to allow those who want to get out and perhaps join another fishery or do something different. I just want to thank you for your time and hopefully for your support for SB 82. Thank you.
Thank you for coming out this afternoon, Ms. Wickers. David Wickers, are you on, sir?
Yeah, hi. My name's Dave Wickers. I guess my wife pretty much said it all. We've been fishing there on K Beach there for almost 40 years now. And just want to show my support in this thing 100%. I know some of those other guys are talking that this won't do any good or whatever, but if you ask the drifters right now how many days did they fish last year, we got none. So just want to make that point out to them that we've been, like somebody said already, we've been fighting this thing for ever since I've been fishing. And like I said, it's almost 40 years, and we're just not getting anywhere, so we got to keep trying. So I hope you guys are in support of this thing. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Wickers. Next we have is John Manley. Mr. Manley, are you on, sir?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead with your testimony. You got 2 minutes.
Yeah, my name is John Manley. I'm a commercial fish here on the east side, set net, and I've been fishing going on 50 years, and I support SB 82. And if I only have one permit, and if I get called, that'll be good. And if I don't, that'll be good because I'll fish. And I know that if this goes through and I don't get called, and when I have opportunity to fish, I will definitely catch more fish than I would have if this thing is not going through, because there'll be less nets in front of me. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Manley. Next up is Bruce Manley. Mr. Manley, Bruce Manley, are you on, sir?
Excuse me. Yes, I'm on. I've been fishing since 75, and I'm definitely in favor of Senate Bill 82. I just want to remind Mr. Senator Stedman that, you know, if he was going to buy a permit, if I was to sell you my permit, you just can't go out there and set net. You also have to buy a site. And the site would be probably a lot more expensive. Well, it would be more expensive than the permit. So I just want to let him know that. You just can't buy a set net permit and go set net. And you have to have a place to fish. But, I'm in favor of Senate Bill 82. If, just like my brother said, if this bill does go through, I don't know if I'm going to sell or not. Because if 200 or 300 permits do evaporate, I know when I do fish, I can make a lot more money than I would if I had all those nets around me. I'm in favor of Senate Bill 82.
Okay, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Manley. Next one we have up is Cody Blossom. Mr. Blossom, are you on, sir?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming in loud and clear.
Okay, I'm Cody Blossom, and you heard from my Uncle Doug earlier. I fish on my family's operation that has been going since the early 50s. I'm fourth generation, and I am in support of this buyback because the way things are going, I'm not going to be able to make a living fishing and need to go elsewhere. And it's a shame that I can't make a living fishing, but that's the fact of the time, and something needs to happen.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. Next we have up is Robert Williams. Mr. Williams, are you on, sir?
Mr. Chair, committee members, Rob Williams, fishing since 81, past president for 6 years, the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. I got to start off by saying I couldn't agree more with the naysayers of this bill, which is only a handful of people, I understand, but if we could change things at the Board of Fish, we wouldn't have to be dealing with this. But with a big king goal we have right now, it's unattainable. And I can't, you know, I'm 62 years old. I'm not going to wait till I'm 72 for two life cycles of the king that maybe come back. And by then, the climate, the political climate in Cook Inlet is just different than anywhere else in the state. And, you know, we've vetted this through all our membership, and we got like over 94% of the people want this thing to happen, no cost to the state. And I believe that there'll be a core group of people still fishing, and it's going to be much easier for Fish and Game to manage 125 or 150 permits than it is throwing over 400 in the water. I don't see how you can deny that. And that core group of people has a chance to make a living. And CFEC has finally given us the green light on this, and that was the biggest thing we were waiting for. So please pass Senate Bill 82. It's not going to be up to the state to find the money. That's going to be our battle. And I appreciate you letting me speak in discussing this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Williams. And next we have up is Rudy Wilson. Mr. Wilson, are you on, sir?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing me. And Rudy Wilson, I've been here 52 years all my life. I'm a Kenaisi tribal member. Myself and my in-laws have been fishing the east side set net fishery for generations. And our fishing time lately has been zero. So I support SB 82. I think it's a viable way for us to continue fishing. Any other way, I think we'll just, it'll just be status quo, we'll just be shut down. So I'm in support of the SB 82. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Wilson. Next we have up is Joseph Lehman. Mr. Lehman, are you on, sir?
Yes, Joseph Lehman here. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear.
All right. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Joseph Lehman, and I am in full support of Senate Bill 82. I'm a fourth-generation fisherman at Nanilchik Point, so that makes my children fifth generation. At least I hope so. I call Anchorage home for 10 months out of the year, but Nanilchik is home for two of the most important months to us out of the year. We fish six permits in the same area that my great-grandfather fished. And then my grandfather operated a hand fish trap until they were outlawed in 1959. We've been set netting there ever since. Fishing has been very important to us as a family. I credit fishing for teaching me discipline and hard work ethic and for making Air Force basic training seem a whole lot easier. At least they let me sleep at night. I'd love to see our fishery continue like it was when I was growing up. Unfortunately, though, through mismanagement, our fishery is a mere skeleton of what it used to be. We simply are barely, if at all, allowed to fish. We're no longer able to hire a large crew and run an operation like we used to. We basically have three options, or three different groups of fishermen. Those who want to get out entirely and sell their permits, I don't blame them after the management that we've had. Those who want to stay and hold their permits, assuming our fishery continues, they'll have more opportunity because of less surrounding nets. And then third, those who want to sell some of their permits and hold on to some. I'd say our family falls into that group. We want to hold on to some to provide opportunity to my children. I'd like to teach them some of the valuable lessons I learned from fishing while growing up. This bill satisfies all three fishermen groups, as it's completely voluntary. Thanks for your support of Senate Bill 82.
Thanks for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Lehman. Next we have up is David Martin. Mr. Martin, are you on, sir?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead with 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, my name is David Martin of Clam Gulch. I'm representing myself. I've fished in Cook Inlet for 52 years. I would reference you to read in its entirety the letters, the Kathilof River Yield Graph Curve and the Kenai River King Salmon Escapement drafts from Cook Inlet Fisherman's Fund that has been sent to the legislators. There's no science at all in the management of Cook Inlet salmon. That's one of the main problems. There's a 1980 ADF&G taking study that showed that only 13% of the king swim along the east side beach. And this bill, it's giving false hope to the set netters that the remaining fishermen will be able to fish more. They will not. Board of Fish, the department, has proven that. This whole thing has started from a fabrication of the fabricated king issue, and it's only a smoke screen to close and highly restrict the commercial fisheries to put as many reds in the river as possible. Our past sockeye run sizes and catch data shows that to harvest the surplus salmon on large runs, you have to have aggressive fishing with a full complement of set netters and drifters. The single goal for large king salmon in the Kenai River is what is creating this fisheries disaster you're supposedly trying to fix. From 2013 to now, there has been no verification of these new sonar counters, which ignores about 47% of the fish. Rather than fix something that is not broken, I suggest that you fund an independent study into the department's escapement goals and this management that is not sustained yield management is required. When you look at the graph and some of the information we've sent down, when you count all the kings, the escapement has always been met in the SEG range. And I would also say that the problem is that the fish are not being managed biologically, scientifically, or legally for optimum yield as the state constitution or the Magnus and Stevens Act commands. This is against the national interest, national food supply, and interstate commerce. This is not fair for the future generations. And I think most of the people that are supporting of this would much rather fish than to have a buyback, as it's been stated by the NIFMAG. Thank you.
So, Mr. Martin, are you for the legislation or against it?
I'm strongly opposed.
Okay. Our last one that's on the line is Mr. Harry Lehman. Mr. Lehman, are you on, sir?
I believe you're talking to me. This is Butch Lehman. I'm in support of the bill. I can repeat points that everyone made. I've been on the beach since traps were shut down, and I'm in the same spot where my dad's last fish trap was down in Nenelchik. And I've trained up a lot of kids that went on to college. Some went into the military for decades. And it's a valuable experience for them to help form their future endeavors in work and living, family and all that. And my son now moved to Oregon because we can't make a living up here. And I don't think the two issues are mutually exclusive. Fixing the Board of Fish mishandling of the regulations and providing this buyout option to reduce the impact of all the gear and giving people who have gone bust and out. So I'm in favor of the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming out this afternoon, Mr. Lehman. That concludes everybody that's online. Is there anybody else in the room that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? If not, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Before we set this bill aside, Senator Bjorkman, do you want to go ahead and have some closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to seeing you all again soon when this bill is up again for another hearing and hopefully passage out of your committee. Thank you, everyone.
Mr. Jackson, you have anything to say? Okay, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon. That closes this the agenda for this afternoon. Our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And so with that, we're adjourned at 3:23 p.m.